Hello and welcome in.
First science. Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Hello and welcome to Science Mixtape with me, Kyle Major. Carl Sagan said, "We live in a society exquisitely dependent on science and technology, in which hardly anyone knows anything about science and technology." Well, that's not quite true, and my guest today is certainly doing something about it. Sophie Arthur is a biologist at Southampton University studying stem cells with an impressive social media following and a passion for spreading science to everyone. Hello, Sophie, and welcome to Science Mixtape.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so Sophie, you're very good at letting people into the world of your kind of day-to-day science, the things you share. What was the last thing you shared?
It tends to vary on kind of what social media platform I'm using. So kind of, I've had the weekend off, so on my story today on Instagram, I was kind of just sharing a bit of an update with people what I'd been up to and what might be coming in the near future. I shared a new blog post yesterday with a lovely guest blogger called Sarah, who was a science communication intern over the summer. So she spent the summer in Malta organising a whole host of different events and that sort of stuff. It's a little bit of everything.
Bit of a roundup then for the what's to come. We also have Miriam on the producing desk today. So Miriam, you're also, say hi.
Hi. Hello, Science Mixers.
You're also pretty up on the social media too. What have you shared recently?
Well, so I'm a big follower of Sophie, so I love you and I love what you do. And the last thing I shared was I actually just finished my master's. I submitted my thesis last week. So the next thing is a Viva. So it's an oral examination. So I was just posting about, like, you know, Viva tips and basically a summary of all the research work that I did in the US in the past 4 months.
All right. So that's the latest post. Everyone should go and check them out. We should just start at the top. Just say, how can everyone follow you, Sophie?
Oh, so Instagram, I'm at soph.talks.science. Twitter is at soph.talksci. And then my blog's called Soph Talk Science, and you can find me on Facebook with the same name as well then.
Brilliant. Well, let's kick things off with your first song. And you've got When We Are Young by Adele. Is there any reason you chose this one?
I'm just in love with Adele and everything she does. So we went to see her live last summer, and she just blew me away. So I was very lucky to go before she's going to retire or something. So yeah, I'm very, very lucky to go have gone and experienced the whole Adele live thing.
Cool. Well, here it is.
Everybody loves the things you do, from the way you talk to the way you move. Everybody here is watching you, 'cause you feel like home, you're like a dream come true. But if by chance,
there are two types of stem cells, adult and embryonic. Adult stem cells are those that develop into the same type of cell as the tissue they reside in. And embryonic stem cells are like starter cells, where they can form into a variety of cell types.
So that's our first fact of the show. Was that right, Sophie?
Yeah. It's obviously a lot more complicated in the fact that there's hundreds of different types of adult stem cells. And then they're sort of all broadly sort of packaged under the term adult stem cells. And then you've also kind of got totipotent stem cells, which is essentially just a fertilized egg. But I like to call it like the ultimate stem cell, because it kind of makes any cell type you find in your body. But then it also makes like the placenta and the umbilical cord and everything like that too.
The ultimate stem cell. I like that. I think the ultimate stem cells, that what we just call it from now on. So you've just finished your PhD. Right? You've handed in. Feels good to be finished?
Yes, I'm very relieved. I got a bit stir crazy just staring at a screen every day, but when I managed to hit print on that on the screen, it was just a huge sense of relief. But then watching all that paper came out, I had to think that I had to plant a couple of trees again to get it back.
Yeah, exactly. You end up just printing and printing and doing so much. It's a hard slog at the end there, I think. I finished mine, God, a few years ago now, so it's been a while since I got into that slog. But did you have some good bits? What were some of your best bits during the PhD?
So probably one of the main highlights was probably, I think during my second year, I entered the 3-minute thesis competition. So if you don't quite know what that is, it's kind of, you have one slide, static slides, so no animations, and then obviously 3 minutes to describe your PhD thesis or PhD research to like a lay audience, so not a specialist audience. So it wasn't really something I wanted to do in the first place. I was not a very confident public speaker, or at least I was a lot worse. So I got very nervous speaking, and I didn't think I'd be very good at it. And I felt that a lot of the people I was up against was like trying to find like a different treatment for a particular disease, whereas I'm literally just looking at the biology of something.
It's a so bit more I was, like blue sky
I didn't
research
think people would kind of
applied.
Was interested in that as much, but I really enjoyed it, and so that's kind of what sparked me to reignite my blog again, so, and got me started on the science communication journey. So that was probably one of the highlights.
Oh wow, okay. So you were kind of brought in from one of these outreach things, but that wasn't what you were doing all the time. Like, what was your regular day in the lab like? Because you were doing stuff in a biology lab, right?
Correct. Yeah, so I'm kind of more of like a molecular biologist type thing. So I spent obviously most of my day in a lab. So whether that would be in the hood, culturing cells, or keeping my stem cells alive, to then setting experiments up on them. So what I tended to do a lot of the time was kind of change the conditions that my stem cells were kept in. And then I would take a sample and sort of look at how a handful of different proteins, how their expression changed, or how the gene expression changed with the genes I was looking at then.
So this is really like what I'd imagine a biology lab to be like. You know, you have like a pipette and you're moving things from culture to culture and then like in a lab coat and everything. That's exactly how I imagine it, right?
Yeah, it's if you watch me do what I do, it looks really, really dull, because I'm literally moving like one colorless liquid into another one and then moving that into another colorless liquid. There's not much color going on in what I do until you kind of get the end product, which is either like a sheet of numbers and you have to work out what that means, or occasionally you get kind of a Western blot. So I kind of do them the old fashioned way, using like the x-ray films of how they like develop the photographs in sort of the old movies in the dark room. That's how I spent most of my PhD, stuck in the dark really. So yeah, it was kind of it wasn't very visual in the way, but it was kind, I loved working like piecing those puzzles together and working out what that meant in the bigger picture.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this must take something from you. Is there something in you that like, patience, being able to do this thing day after day? Do you think maybe you need like a particular kind of person to do a PhD?
So like the first thing I ever say to like the undergrads or the medical students that I've taught over the last couple of years is that you have to be resilient. Everything will not work at some point. And most of the time you have no idea why that happens. So you could do the same experiment exactly the same time, like exactly the same way, conditions the second time, and it just won't work. And it's not necessarily a reflection on you as a scientist. Sometimes it just doesn't work. So definitely one of the things you need to do is be resilient and sort of channel that frustration and anger almost into just getting up and doing it again and fixing the problem.
Yeah, I guess most of science doesn't work, right? It's like you spend, as a scientist, you spend most of your time figuring out how not to do it, and then eventually you figure out how actually you do it.
Yes.
And so how did you decide to do a PhD? Because I know a lot of people, that's all they want to do. They want to be scientists. Some people kind of cast around a bit and fall into it. What happened to you? How did your path lead you to PhD?
So I finished my undergrad then in 2014, and so my penultimate year in undergrad I spent a year in industry. So I did a year-long research project, and I really loved doing it, but when I came to the end of my undergrad, I kind of still didn't really know which direction I wanted to go in terms of career. So I really liked the idea of being like a science writer and a journalist, that side of things, but at that point in time I had no experience in it. but I had also really enjoyed this research side. So I thought probably the best option for me was to try and get that PhD, get more research experience, build my skill set as a competent researcher, and whilst also trying a whole heap of things on the side. So I've obviously been blogging to try and get myself experience in the writing side. I've done a couple of different internships, and my eyes have just been open to more and more careers as I've gone through my PhD as well. So for me, it was more just kind of getting that experience to then hopefully be able to decide which career direction to go in.
Yeah, I mean, so I did the same. I kind of fell into a PhD. I think I mainly did a PhD because I didn't want to get a job, and I figured like that's just more education, right? Surely it's exactly the same thing. I'm just still learning.
Yeah. I think I'm one of those people that is always constantly just wanting to learn. So if I'm a forever student, I don't think I'd really mind until at the end of the month when I don't really have any money left to do it, all the nice things like my friends have,
yeah,
who have jobs and everything.
Exactly, but so, when you're a student, you're quite good at it, right? You know, all that practice of living on no money at all.
Yeah.
Right, we're going to go on to your second song now. So this is called This Is Me, and it's from The Greatest Showman. And it says by Kiala Settle. I don't know how to say her name.
Yeah, I didn't know how to spell her name or anything. I just thought...
Hey, so this is This Is Me from Kiala Settle from The Greatest Showman.
Cut me down. I'm gonna send a blood, gonna drown a mind. I am brave, I am bruised, I am who I'm meant to be. This is me. Look out, cause here I come. And I'm marching on to the beat I drum. I'm not scared to be seen, I make no apologies. This is me.
Scientists believe that because embryonic stem cells develop into a range of other types of cells, they may be used in the near future to treat a wide range of diseases and injuries.
Well, there we go. That was really what you were looking into, Sophie, during your PhD. Let's be a bit more specific. What actually were you doing?
So basically, I'm trying to work out kind of the mechanisms behind how a pluripotent stem cell can be maintained in a pluripotent state or keep its ability to self-renew. So that just means that it retains its ability to make any cell type that you find in your body, but also create infinite identical copies of itself.
So pluripotency, that means that it has the ability to become other cell types, right?
Yeah, so there's kind of loads of different degrees of potency, so to speak. So like the totipotency, which was the fertilized egg, that can be all the cells that are in your body plus the placenta and umbilical cord. The next step down is kind of your pluripotency, so that can only make all the ones that are found in your body. The next step down is kind of multipotency, so that's kind of slightly more restricted again, but can make a few select different cell types. So kind of bone marrow stem cells are a good example of that one. And then you go down to like unipotent stem cells, which, as the name suggests, and you can probably guess, can only make into one type of stem cell.
Right, okay. So, and you were looking at all of these different stages, or you were looking at how they change between one and the other? What was it you were looking at?
So I was just focused on pluripotent stem cells. So I worked with embryonic stem cells. So I was just kind of looking at how like their metabolism and their epigenetics, so kind of like the shape of the DNA and the chromatin sort of define their cell state then in simple terms.
All right, so you're looking at the metabolism of the cell. This is how they make energy, basically. How is that different from a normal cell in your body?
So the main kind of difference is that stem cells, they don't have functional or mature mitochondria. So the mitochondria is primarily the way we get most of our energy in cells. But because they aren't functional in a stem cell, they primarily use glycolysis. So in terms of general metabolism, the cell will take up glucose and go through glycolysis first, and then it will sort of pass it on later on to the mitochondria, where it goes through oxidative phosphorylation.
So the mitochondria are the little bits that are in our cells that take the sugars and turn them into the energy that the cell can use.
So the sugar, so glucose starts off, it goes through glycolysis first of all, and it then gets converted into a whole load of other different things via a whole series of enzymatic reactions, and then it gets passed to the mitochondria, where it uses oxygen chains and transporters and stuff to kind of get the ATP and energy out of it that way. But it's much more efficient to use the mitochondria rather than purely glycolysis, which is what pluripotent stem cells do.
So they just focus on, or they don't focus on it, they just don't have the mitochondria to do it.
Yeah, they don't have the capabilities to use that then.
So that means that there are different things which affect the metabolism of these cells compared to normal cells. What are the different things that affect the metabolism?
So there's a whole heap of different things. It's kind of, it's mainly working out how all these different things work together. So there's kind of obviously the gene expression, then there's whole like epigenetic regulation and all the whole microRNA things. Then you've got like signaling pathways, nitric oxide, hypoxia, like all your environmental sort of conditions.
So this is how much oxygen around the cell that changes how it metabolizes. And you were looking at that specifically, right?
Yeah, so I was kind of really trying to work out how metabolism, epigenetics and pluripotency under hypoxia all work together and collaborate. Because there's kind of a chicken and egg story that I'm trying to sort of solve as to whether metabolism and hypoxia sort of regulate pluripotency, or it was the pluripotency that was changing the metabolism in the cell and the environment, that side of things. So as you were kind of saying that these different things regulate the effect of metabolism, from my kind of research, I would probably say back to you that it's kind of how metabolism is changing all these other things to keep the stem cell in a pluripotent state then.
So what came first, the chicken or the egg?
Well, I still don't know, but I would be more inclined to say that it's the metabolism that is affecting everything else. So I'm kind of now interested in how that metabolic state starts or occurs in the first place.
Right. Okay. So, and what are the primary kind of things that affect that initial state?
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of a toss up at the moment, because I've obviously worked under hypoxia, and we know that when an embryo is developing in the uterus, that it's exposed to much lower oxygen tensions and concentrations. So when I've mimicked that in the lab using a lower oxygen concentration, we kind of see that that is boosting the stem cell's ability to, in essence, be a better stem cell. So it makes it more pluripotent and it increases its ability to be able to create endless copies of itself.
Right, okay. So it sounds like quite complicated research and very lots of different mechanisms that are going in. But day to day, this was just moving colorless liquids. I can't believe how you kept all of this explanation in your head when it just looks like you're just moving water from one place to another.
Yeah, it's quite easy to lose track of what you're doing. But I'm very much like a visual person, so I would kind of like the amount of time I would spend drawing on a board, putting arrows back and forth to each other to try and get a picture of what was going on, rather than just seeing this drop in like protein expression, for example.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so we're going to move on to your third song. And this is the Zac Brown Band featuring Alan Jackson with As She's Walking Away. Was there a reason you chose this one?
I'm kind of a closet country music fan, and this is kind of the first song that my fiance sort of introduced me to, so it's kind of resonated and got a bit of a special connection with me ever since.
Brilliant. Well, here it is.
We never spoke a word, but every thought she had I heard from across the room. We were standing face to face, I couldn't find the words to say, give me one more move. I don't even know her name. I guess foolish pride's to blame. Now I'm falling in love as she's walking away, and my heart won't tell my mind to tell.
In 1998, scientists first learned how to isolate human embryonic stem cells. They were developed for infertility purposes through in vitro fertilization.
So, Sophie, we've been talking a little bit about the science that you've been doing and how you're actually what work you're doing in the lab. But you spent quite a lot of time sharing your work through social media and blogging as well. And that's something, mm-hmm. obviously, you said you started from this three-minute thesis thing. Why did you start? What do you want people to kind of take away from that?
So the main sort of things is kind of, I want to kind of just show people what life as a scientist is really like, what scientists are really like. We're not all that stereotypical image of an old white dude in a lab coat with crazy white hair and glasses. So it's kind of just showing what options are out there to like young girls and boys who might be interested in science. And then even a bit further along, so starting a PhD, like when I started mine, I knew what research I'd be doing, but what day-to-day life as a PhD student would really involve, I had no idea. So I'd like to just share the experiences that I've had. So hopefully that might help somebody to be more prepared when they start their journey.
Yeah, I definitely think that's right. I think that when people start doing something like a PhD, they don't really know exactly what it's going to be like.
And no.
there's kind of a bit of a mystery in that people don't really tell you. They don't really talk about it because they're like, oh, well, I figured it out on my own, so you should figure it out on your own. And it's like, no, that's
not
really...
Yeah, no, I'm definitely against all that. It's always support each other, collaborate with each other.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, in general, do you think, like, people who are scientists, who are working in science, should be more contactable on social media and things like that?
Yes and no. So, like, if you're always... No, because if you're always looking for a job, the slightest... thing that you might have tweeted like years ago or shared that somebody who is looking to employ you might not agree with, that could go against you. So there's some kind of cons on it from that side of things. But in terms of talking about your research, I would love to see everybody sharing it on social media or in live events, however they feel more comfortable, because I'm quite passionate about science education. So I feel like we need to instill sort of a scientific curiosity in everybody, especially in this whole world of fake news now. So I kind of like to share the science behind big headlines or any little thing, to be honest, any little science question that people might have, so they can then make their own informed opinions rather than just...
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. I have this kind of pet, you know, thought that everyone's always like told how beautiful like Shakespeare is, or you know, that language is beautiful and you should appreciate it, but no one ever gets told like how beautiful science is, you know, and that actually sharing things like this, you can actually show people, oh wow, this is really cool, this is actually,
yeah,
you know, it looks amazing. Are there some like favorite people you have that you like to follow where you can get good stuff off?
Oh, there's so many awesome people out there. Like, I love following Marianne, for example. There's some big, like, communities on Instagram and Twitter, for example. There's one called the Science Community and another one called the STEM Squad. So they're kind of big collections of female scientists, or a mixture of male and female scientists from all across the world studying anything you can possibly imagine in all sorts of scientific careers. So if there's kind of something that someone is interested in, there's more than likely someone on there that they could be interested in and following to get sort of a glimpse into what their life is like or what their career could be like. But then I really like to follow Two Photon Art and Science on a Postcard for like their science art and all their pin badges and postcards they sort of design. But as for personal people, then I have a friend called Emma Osborne. She has an Instagram account called Emma Enigma. She studies gravitational waves and always makes physics much more understandable to me, who can't understand them at all. Yes, there's basically loads of different people on there, like I also recently discovered Susanna Harris, who is all about speaking about mental health in grad school and academia as well. So there's a whole host of different things that people share. So there is definitely something out there for someone.
No, yeah, it's nice that actually this is starting to expand really quickly now, that if you look, if you look for someone who's like interested in your area, you're definitely going to find them.
Thank you so much for following me, Sophie. I love following you and what you do and seeing your PhD journey. And I was going to say, stuff like with the STEM Squad, isn't it just amazing how we have this online community, but you also have meetups where we can meet in person and talk about our experiences. So I think you had a STEM Squad meetup this summer, am I right? How was that?
Yeah, no, it is really amazing. Like, this community is so supportive, and you feel like, although you haven't met all these people, you feel like you're really good friends with them. So it is amazing. I haven't had too many meetups. So I met up with Emma, first of all, I think it was the start of this year. So we just chatted about how we could both improve our sort of Instagram game. And then I just had a chat with her after she did the Pint of Science Festival here in Southampton in May. So we've kind of met up. There's Lisa from Inner Science World, who literally works in the office down the corridor from me. So we're often sort of bumping into each other, that side of things. But then I went to New Scientist Live about 3 weeks ago now, and I met up with Charlie from How It Works magazine, Mafalda from The Lab Notebook, and Teresa from PhD to Success. And it was honestly just like bumping into someone that you've known for years, like you just chatted and like you knew this person. It was really weird.
You've done a lot of live action kind of outreach stuff as well, right? Including like you started with 3 minute thesis, but have you done any more presentations and kind of things as well as doing these meetups, but actually doing live action presentations talking about science?
Yeah, so I've only really done it this year. I've got into it a bit more. So I signed up to do Soapbox Science in Brighton in June, and I was terrified before stepping onto that box, but I absolutely love doing it. And standing on a box by the sea talking to people about stem cells was not something I thought I would ever do. So I've done another one of those events since. That was only a few weeks ago, actually. I've also then done a few talks in schools about a career in science or a career in STEM. I've also done a few talks about being a woman in science. And then also I've done more of like moderating and organising events. So I organised the Pint of Science Festival here in Southampton for the last 2 years. And I've also done online moderating for the I'm a Scientist, Get Me Out of Here event, which although I didn't actually do much science communicating myself, just to see the questions that the kids asked was just amazing how their brains worked. Like, I've never really thought about it before, so I was amazed by that.
Yeah, I love that. Whenever you do anything with kids, you always just think, oh my god, how do they think of these questions?
I know
it's amazing. Right, so we're gonna move on to your fourth song, and this is Promises by Calvin Harris with Sam Smith. Why did you choose this one?
I've sort of been a bit out of touch with like the really current music. So over the weekend, we just had the radio on, and I just really loved this song, basically.
Oh, wow. A recent favorite. All right,
yeah,
here we go.
Yeah.
This is Promises.
Are you drunk enough now to judge what I'm doing? Are you high enough to excuse that I'm ruined? 'Cause I'm ruined. Is it late enough for you to come and stay over? 'Cause we're free to love, so tease me. Ooh. I made no promises, I can't do golden rings, but I'll give you everything.
Tonight.
Magic is in the air.
Pluripotent stem cells have the potential to differentiate into almost any cell in the body. This means that under the right circumstances, a stem cell that is isolated from an embryo can produce almost all of the cells in the body.
Science.
News.
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 News. News. Ooh, okay, so it's time to head off into science news. Sophie, what did you bring for us? This is, we normally do science news, but this is a little bit different. What did you have?
Yeah, so I watched a documentary on BBC quite recently, all about our plastic problems. So we all kind of know that there's this huge issue with plastic, but watching this documentary was just so incredibly eye-opening about how severe this problem actually is. And if anyone can watch BBC iPlayer, I would 1,000,000% recommend going to watch it.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen this, but I like the fact that you've actually suggested a documentary, because that's something that you can go and see and like actually experience. And obviously this plastic thing is really getting out of hand. The thing that I've got is actually slightly related to that, which is something quite close to my heart, which is that actually climate change could make beer expensive. Which is, I know, right? Really, really terrible. Turns out that warmer weather and drought, both of which are likely due to climate change, what that means is as things are hotter and drier, barley crop yields could go down by as much as 17%. And this is within the next 50 to 100 years. And under more extreme climate change projections, it could be as much as 17%. And what this means is that on average, beer would double in price in some countries. And I just love this research. This is such great research that someone's done about how beer is going to get more expensive because of climate change. You know, people obviously don't care enough about climate change. And so the way to make people care is tell them that their beer is going to get expensive. And this was actually, this was published in like Nature Plants. This is a big, important journal. It's been big, important science here. Mariam, you've got something for us. What have you got?
So apparently male birds can either be good looking or good singers, and they can't be both. So for example, a male peacock looks beautiful, but it doesn't sound great. So Christopher Cooney at the University of Oxford and his team carried out some research on 500 different species and to see the kind of common traits, whether they were good-looking birds or whether they were good singers. And so basically, birds with really colourful feathers weren't good singers, so their songs were kind of monotone, really short, and then birds with not really nice feathers or not really nice coloured feathers had really long songs with loads of different notes, so they had more interesting songs, and so they have no idea why this is the case, but basically male birds can either be good singers or really good looking.
Well, it's a shame they can't be both, but anyway, I had something which was quite cool. This is about cameras that are able to look like a mantis shrimp. All right, so mantis shrimps have this amazing color vision. They see like seven different colors. They can see polarization. They can see all sorts of things that humans can't see. And so what this is this was a report in Optica, and what they did is they designed a camera that had these tiny little wires on them. And what the wire does is it acts like a polarizing filter, and it means that the camera can see only particular polarizations. And so it works a bit like polarizing sunglasses, right? That you don't see reflections and things like that. But what this actually enables the shrimps to do is, because they can see very different levels of light, it means that they can see almost inside a cave and outside a cave at the same time. You know, obviously when you go outside, suddenly it gets a lot brighter and your eyes can't really deal with the differences in intensity, whereas mantis shrimps have got around this by changing polarization so that only certain polarizations come through, and then they can work with better levels. And so they've ended up using this for cameras so that you have a much like wider range of what you can actually see. And they think that maybe this is going to be useful for like self-driving cars and that sort of thing, where actually the restrictions on how much light, different light levels that cameras can see is quite a big issue. So I think that's quite cool. This is like bio-inspired, yeah, you know, stuff. So that's really, really good. Yeah. And what else did you have for us, Mary?
So there are moons that orbit moons, and there's a debate on what to call them. So there's one guy called Duncan Forgan who recently published a paper. Well, his paper is about to be published, and he wants to call them moon moons. But most everyone else in the science community is calling them sub moons. I personally think moon moons are just the coolest name ever. And so basically, what a moon moon is a moon orbiting another moon, and they have to orbit close enough to remain remain within the gravitational pull of the moon, but far away enough from the planet that the moon that they're orbiting is near to. And so you have to kind of have this balance of how close you are to the moon and then how close you are to the planet so that that moon is not pulled apart. And so these are very rare, but there are cases where they think we can find moons in our solar system. So they think that Jupiter's moon Callisto and Saturn's moon Titan might be some of the places where we might find a moon.
What I want to know is, where's the limit, right? You have a moon, then you have a moon, then you have a moon.
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Eventually, how many, you know, it's just going to get out of hand.
Yep.
And just die. Okay, so we're going to move on to your fifth song, Sophie. You got Tiny Temper with Pass Out. Why the Tiny Temper?
Yeah, this is kind of just like our uni song. And whenever it comes on in the car, we just like start jamming to it. So it's just one of those songs that I've always loved.
Brilliant. Here it is.
It's okay. I'm good. Let's go. Stars out. We bring the women and the cars out. Let's have a toast to celebration, get a glass out. And we can do this until we pass out.
Let it rain, let it go away.
Yeah.
We won't come down until we hit the ground.
Yeah. Pass out.
Induced pluripotent stem cells are stem cells that scientists make in the laboratory. They do this by taking normal adult cells, like skin or blood cells, and reprogram them to become stem cells that can develop into any cell type.
Cool. It's great. The stem cell stuff is just so amazing and fascinating. But unfortunately, Sophie, we've come to the dreaded question for everyone who's just finished a PhD, and they obviously hate, which is, what's next for Sophie doing science?
Oh no, that awful question. The short answer is basically I don't really know right now. The dream for me would be to be able to just do science communication on Instagram and on social media at events forevermore and get paid to do it. But I'm in a bit of a dilemma because I love doing research and I love piecing together the bits of the puzzle to like create new knowledge, but then I also don't want to be in the whole academic environment fighting for funding and getting a publication record for like the rest of my career. So I'm kind of debating whether it's the right option to stay in the research route or move more into like an editorial role or a journalist role or something along those sorts of lines. So I'm just trying to work out which is the best way for me now.
So it's a bit up in the air at the moment. We're not really sure.
I have no idea.
Well, good. That's exactly what happened to me. So you've been doing a lot of writing. You know, if maybe if this is something you want to do, you've got on your blog, you do an interview or something called Science in the Spotlight, which
yes.
I found really fascinating. Is there anyone you want to get on? Maybe who's the next person who would be a great catch for that?
Oh, I started that feature to try and showcase sort of like the real life scientists, so to speak, like the normal scientists that are doing it every sort of day in the lab, grinding out more data, more research. But if I was trying to get sort of a bigger name, I would love to have the likes of Brian Cox on there or Hannah Fry. Or when I went to New Scientist Live, there was a talk from Tim Peake and a couple of other ones. It was Nyx Wetherill was one of them, who is a woman that went on an expedition around Antarctica, and we all obviously know that Tim Peake went up to the International Space Station. So talking to them about expeditions and how science could help them breathe.
Yeah, Nyx is really someone who'd we'd love to get on.
Amazing.
She was a doctor, right, in Antarctica.
Yeah, she's part of like Army Medics or something, isn't she?
Yeah, it would be really great. I think she's someone who would love to get on the show. So you're really good at getting your work out there and spreading it. Is there any tips for anyone who wants to do the same?
Well, first of all, I would just say, just give it a go. because I sat for ages thinking, oh, I'd love to write about this, I'd love to blog about this, I'd love to share this, but I didn't actually do anything because I was afraid of what people would think of it. So I would definitely always say to people, just do it, give it a go, and also just to try out all the different mediums to try and work out which way is best for you. So you might prefer writing, so you might rather do a blog or write articles for magazines. You might be better at making videos and YouTube is the way down you want to do it, or like there's the whole social media aspect of things. So I think try everything out and see which one fits you best.
Brilliant. So let's just say one more time, how can people follow you, how can people see what you do, see what you put out?
So my blog is Soph Talk Science. I'm on Instagram at soph.talks.science. Twitter is at Soph Talk Sci, and on Facebook with the same blog name then as well.
Brilliant. So Sophie, thanks so much for coming on. It's been really
thank
great
you for having
to you. Guys, you've been listening to Science Mixtape with me, Kyle Major. Our producer is Merrin Babusha. We have social media. You can find us at Science Mixtape on Instagram and Twitter. We want to know what you think. Get in touch. It only remains for me to thank today's guest, Sophie Arthur. Again, thank you, Sophie. And we're going to finish on your last song, which is Mumford & Son with The Cave. Why'd you choose this one?
It's just another sort of guilty pleasure of mine. Anything by Mumford & Son makes me want to dance and get up and is a bit of a mood boost.
All right, well, here's a mood boost. Thank you and goodbye.
But I will hold on hope, and I won't let you choke on the noose around your neck, and I'll find strength in pain, and I will change my ways. I'll know my name as it's cold again. To fill my time, you take what is yours and I'll take mine.